Hello, and this is Adam coming from the Philosopher's Corner on this fine Wednesday morning. So this is three ways to fight the state for the normal person. Number three, let's just crack right into it. Number three is peaceful parenting. This is in no particular order. It's just three practical ways that the individual themselves can fight statism. Peaceful parenting, obviously, absolutely crucial. Kind of a if the term even exists, kind of a positive eugenics. So what we're basically advocating is peaceful parenting. So teaching kids the art of negotiation, teaching kids that to resolve disputes we don't use force, we use incentives, disincentives, rewards, punishment, ostracism, no physical violence. It just doesn't work. It teaches the wrong perspective on life. It frames the child in the statist perspective, because obviously statism is defined as the initiation of the use of force. And if you frame the child in that mentality to begin with, it's much easier to ram the jack into the back of their head so that they're stuck within the statist matrix for the rest of their life. They inherently believe that force is the compelling factor in any situation that should need negotiation. So yes, peaceful parenting, definitely extremely important. This is something that's in our direct control if we have children. So it's just something that's a no-brainer, really. Peaceful parenting, the next generation, if we had an entire generation of people adopting this philosophy in their child's upbringing, I think we would have a voluntary society follow extremely quickly. So second is, it sounds like a cliche, but be the change that you want to be. It sounds very political, but it isn't. It's what I essentially mean is that just talk to people. Talk to people about anarchism, or talk to people about voluntarism. Ask them questions. I mean, do you consider taxation to be a free choice? What do you think the state is? Ask them what the state is. Ask them what their money is. Ask them these questions. People do respond. I've found if you talk to people about these things, if you make them think, there's a little spark of, oh yeah, I've never really thought about that. Often people haven't just been exposed to this thing. It's not that they're not critical thinkers in and of itself. It's that they've never been exposed to these kinds of questioning. And so it's just a case of using the knowledge that we have to spread ideas in things like podcasts, things like this video. I've written a book, so talking to other anarchists and trying to spread the ideas of freedom and voluntarism about. So yeah, it's such a simple thing, but it's highly effective. You have direct control over this kind of thing. Don't be afraid. You can either take the circuitous route, and probably the much more subtle route, which when my discussion with Danilo and Peaceful Anarchy, he was saying that he's asked questions, kind of like the Socratic method, if you like, or do you believe taxation is good, and just sort of wheeling around to the actual point and then say, oh yeah, by the way, I'm an anarchist, or let them derive that fact from the questioning itself. And then finally, and I can't stress this enough, don't vote. I know I've got a bit of a gripe about this, but just don't vote. I think most people take this for granted anyway. A lot of people are certainly apathetic to the idea of voting. They're becoming very aware that it doesn't matter who you vote for, Republican, Democrat, Conservative or Labour, it doesn't make an essential difference. They both still use the initiation of the use of force. They both covet and want covet the levers of the state, and they're both redistributing wealth, and there's the same essential claims are there. So they're still claiming your body, they're still claiming dominion over you. You don't own yourself in this system. There is an implicit claim on your life, which if you read my book, I explain all this, that people are inherently self-owning. They own themselves and their actions. We all accept this, and yet there's this glaring contradiction where the statists say, well, actually, you're responsible for your actions, but we also claim the right to conscript you. We also claim the right to take your money. We just call it taxation. So yeah, those are the three main ways, very briefly, as to how you can directly fight the state. Peaceful parenting, absolutely crucial. Spread of knowledge, such a simple thing. Just talk to people, question them, question their assumptions about how society functions, about how things can be provided in society. Do we need a state to provide all these things? No. And then finally, just don't vote. Encourage people not to vote. They're all the same. It's as simple as that. So three ways you can fight the state. And I encourage you to embrace these ways. Thank you very much. If you find this content interesting, if you find this content enlightening, please subscribe and like. It really helps me. The book is now available on Amazon, The Declaration of the Self on the Abolition of the State. My website is www.clarkad.co.uk. All links at the end of the video. Many more videos coming. Thank you very much, and I shall see you later.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network on thuseesofliberty.com or the solpodcast.org and the Conscious Resistance Network. Peaceful Anarchism is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except for governments and the agents thereof. You can find out more information for this at BIPCOT.org. So today I am delighted to have on Adam Clark coming in from England. He's an author and an anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, and his website is www.clarkad.co.uk, and his book is entitled On the Declaration of the Self. So it's kind of a spinoff of the Declaration of Independence, but anarcho-capitalist version. And you can find him on Facebook under Adam Clark. It's his personal profile. And then I guess for his book is Me Too, M-E number two. And he is not associated with the Me Too movement, so don't ask him if he's a feminist. No! On Twitter, you can find him at Clark16. And then on YouTube, his YouTube channel is AD Clark. So we're going to talk a little bit about his path to voluntarism and anarcho-capitalism, how he came to this philosophy, and we're going to get into his book and what that's all about, because it's a fascinating read. So, Adam, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. You messaged me, was it a couple months ago, about your book, yeah. And you sent it to me very graciously. And, you know, delightful book. I love your style. You know, I appreciate good writing because I'm not an author, but I have written quite a bit, you know, articles and stuff like that. And, you know, I wrote, like, I guess you can say treatises for myself, you know, in high school, apart from school, of course, apart from school. Yeah. And, yeah, and I love to write. You know, I feel very comfortable with the written word. So when I find someone who, you know, is able to write eloquently and concisely and direct, because, you know, it's funny with writing. People, you know, when you first start writing, people think that if you just, you know, bombard the reader with a bunch of adjectives, that's good writing, you know? And I think I initially wrote like that, but then as I matured as a writer, I slowly was distilling my writing into its most you know, essential ideas and components. Like, how can you get across your idea in the fewest words possible? That's my goal when I write. And I get that same vibe with you. So please, before we get into that, get into how you came to this philosophy of voluntarism and anarcho-capitalism.
I would say definitely the flashpoint of it all was the I'll be very boring, the UK general election in 2010. So basically what happened was there was a coalition was formed for the first time in a very long time in this country. So usually it's red, blue, kind of like Republican, Democrat, but Tory and Labour. And what happened in that year was that one of the smaller parties called the Liberal Democrats joined with one of the major parties, and basically if you're a smaller party you kind of like spout a lot of nonsense on the campaign, don't you? Say, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and they promised to abolish tuition fees for university students. And basically they didn't think they was going to get into power. They got into power, and instead of abolishing tuition fees, they tripled them. So complete reversal of what they did. And that is kind of shattering when you believe in something. And I was still very much a statist back then. I believed in all sorts of crazy stuff. And it's just shattering, isn't it, when someone does something like that, just a complete 180 degree turn. It puts your views into perspective, and you think, well, what are these people actually doing this for?
Actually, that reminds me of an analogy where it's like, it's not only that they don't do what they said they're going to do, but they hurt people, and they don't do it, and they hurt people. It's like somebody sells you a car, and not only does it not drive, but when you turn the ignition, it explodes, and then you die.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So to me, that's the analogy of the state. You know, it's like, it's not just that it fails. It's that also that it hurts people in the process of failing.
Yeah. It doesn't just hurt you; it breaks every bone in your body. Yeah. While it does it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just crazy.
I mean, to me, I wasn't really political at all. My parents, my family was more Democrat, and so I voted for Obama in 2008 just because my mother said vote for Obama. I didn't really care, so I did. But after that, I atoned for my sins and I never voted again. So, I don't advocate voting basically at all.
No.
But politics for me really didn't really get me into it that much. More, more reading of economics and understanding history. You know, Tom Woods and things like that, and the philosophy of voluntarism. I love philosophy and economics. That's what I love more than hearing these political clowns and, you know, con men talk. You know, to me, that's just like, I don't know, it's just like hearing liars talk. Like, how can you believe a word that they say? You know, that's kind of the
people
way I
look do, though. That's the trouble here. People do. And because they're very skilled in rhetoric, they're very skilled in the way they present themselves.
Right.
It's enough to fool people, isn't it?
Yeah. They say, like, the amateur thief is the person that, like, robs people at gunpoint. Right, or robs their house, right, or steals their car, and then you got the next level up, which is the expert, right, which is like the mafia. They control their block, and they make kind of a quasi business, right, out of extorting people. And then you got the godlike level, which is like the politician, which is like, not only are they stealing from people, but they have actually convinced the population that what they're doing is legitimate and necessary for humanity, for civilization. And so
they've institutionalized the process. They've not only have they convinced people, not only are they doing it, but they're convincing people that it's a virtue, it's a good at the same time. So that's the crazy thing about it. It's like a mass Stockholm syndrome. carrying on.
Yeah, because they have control of the education system as well as the media, right? And, you know, tertiary education as well. And so, you know, once you have that, like, how do people break free of that? How does independent thought nurtured and encouraged? Not really. You know, it's the people, you know, like you and me that actually think differently, that are shunned from those institutions and that are cast out, you know?
Yeah. There's no, I mean, the last hope, I think, at the moment for the spread of knowledge, and this is a key ingredient in my book, for the remedy for fighting back statism, trying to break the cycle of the state renewal and state death, you know, revolution and that kind of thing.
Right.
The key aspect of defeating it is the spread of knowledge, and the internet really is the last great hope, isn't it, really? Because like you said, there's no way an anarchist is going to publish a paper they're very rare, let's say, in any kind of faculty in any university, or speak on CNN or anything like that. They wouldn't be given the time. So, yeah, the people like us, like you say, very important. That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, very rare. And like you said, the internet is the savior. And I always make the analogy of the Gutenberg press in the 15th century, how that revolutionized the spread of knowledge just by, you know, mass printing of books. And also, you know, I think they translated the Bible, was it from Latin into like more
John Wycliffe, is it?
Oh, was it?
Translated the Bible from Latin. Translated the Bible from Latin into English. I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. English and every other, you know, provincial language. You know, so common people can understand it. It's not just knowledge reserved for the clergy and aristocracy. And so the same thing with the internet. You know, the mass proliferation of knowledge is a beautiful thing, and is what's helping people to realize, you know, the chains and the cages that they've been living in, right? You know, when you can read about new ideas and think about things in different perspectives, you kind of understand, like, wait a minute, you know, I can do a lot of things, but we still can't say that we're free in the purest sense, you know. So please get into your book and what that's about. Maybe why you wrote it, how you came to writing it, and get into summarize what's about.
So I suppose I just wanted to do something. I don't want to be one of these people that's always badgering my friends or badgering my family, saying, "Well, you do know taxation is forced, don't you? Expect you don't.
Right.
Oh, we pay taxes by choice. No, you don't." I just wanted to sort of concisely put all of these observations, these common sense observations, into, like you said earlier, like a simple format, so it's just easy to go through. So just to do something, to be honest, rather than just sit around and complain about it, I'd rather actually actively make YouTube videos, write a book, talk to good people like yourself, just actually do something. So that was the main impetus, I suppose, for writing the book. What it's about, there's two main aspects to it. Like I say, it's just explaining how we don't need these people. We don't need a state. Everything can be provided privately. Everything can be provided by a free market. It's just cutting through these different, this miasma of these different kind of misconceptions that people have about the nature of people and society and how we don't need the state,
yeah,
really, to provide these public goods. It's just a myth. trying to cut through the indoctrination.
And let me ask you, what books and personalities or YouTube channels have you found most influential to you in your learning and development?
I'd say quite easily Stefan Molyneux, definitely, very big influence. I recall a video, the story of your enslavement.
Yeah, right.
That's very big video, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's quite eye opening when you watch that. Tax livestock.
I think that's his most watched video, like, of all time, of all of his videos.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and he done a lot of early videos as well, you know, with the red background.
Yeah.
Where he's saying, don't vote. This is why you shouldn't vote.
Right.
And you think, well, of course you got to vote, but then he explains why it's futile, really, to vote.
Right. And books? Any books that really influenced you?
Favorite books, I'd say, I like listening to them as well. So I'd say Lysander Spooner, No Treason.
Nice. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Anatomy of the State.
Excellent.
Definitely.
Excellent.
I highly recommend that. So yeah, but those two are the main sort of, I'd say, the main influences, I'd say.
Yeah. Murray Rothbard for me as well really got me going. Yeah. Anatomy of the State, Case for the 100% Gold Dollar, What Has Government Done to Our Money? And then some Walter Block stuff. You know, he wrote the Defending the Undefendables, which is a fascinating book about the economics of you know, scorned and reviled types of people, like that everybody is supposed to hate. You know, like the prostitute, like the slumlord, like the what's it called, the ticket scalper, like the blackmailer.
I find that fascinating because we're supposed to hate these people,
yeah.
But when you look at the essentials of what they do, a prostitute, when you really think about it, they aren't that immoral. They're selling a resource that's theirs. They're
exactly.
self-owning. They're selling their bodies to a willing buyer. So
exactly.
Still a lot.
Yeah,
I've kind of discussed this in the book as well. It's another two interesting terms that are very reviled is anarchist. When you think of the, he's an anarchist.
Right.
He wants the world to burn.
Right.
Capitalist.
Right.
That's another one.
Sure.
Mustache twirling, monocle wearing, rich person who just wants the poor to starve. That's another reviled sort of term, isn't it? Capitalism.
So let me ask you: when you introduce yourself to people, I guess that you never met, and you want to try to introduce them to this philosophy. What do you call yourself?
I'm very direct. I just say I'm an anarchist. And when they say...
you do say, okay.
When they come up, yeah, sure, yeah, I have a bit of fun with it. I say, I say I'm an anarchist. And when they come back with the usual connotations of the word, so you don't believe in law or things like that, I actually direct them to the original context of the word, which is the original Greek context, anarchos,
Which
is without rulers, not without rules.
Right.
But for those who don't know, that's the original meaning of the word.
Yeah.
So it's not that I advocate a society without rules or without laws. It's that like most anarchists don't believe we need rulers.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Of course there's rules.
Yeah. It's funny. Like amongst my friends, I'm a homeschooling father, and so we meet up with a lot of homeschooling families, and I kind of tend to hang out. They kind of tend to be like liberals, you know, mostly Bernie Sanders supporters. I assume you know him, right? And so. I mean, they know I'm an anarchist, but I don't really push my philosophy onto them. You know, we're cool. But it's funny, they kind of make fun of me. Like, we're in, like, you know, we'd be, like, in a beach or a park or something, and then we see some rules, and they're like, oh, Danilo doesn't follow any rules. And I'm like, okay, you know, when you get into, you know, places and institutions that have rules, you know, you got to abide by them. I mean, that's a common, very common misconception. That lawlessness, you know, it's got to be lawless.
No sane person advocates that kind of society, do they? It's a no-brainer. One of these days, I'm just going to turn around and go, yeah, that's exactly what I want. So let's let the lawlessness begin. Like, got a Molotov cocktail there.
Yeah, he says, oh, let me get my Molotov cocktail for my book bag. Hold on.
I've got to get my leather jacket on.
Or that movie. Have you seen, you heard about that movie, The Purge Anarchy?
Yes.
I've
seen it. Is that the first Purge? Is it?
No, I don't think it's the first one. But
Okay. Yeah,
I think the first one was just like the Purge. But I think that wasn't enough to scare people away from like anarchists. They had to make it the next one, the Purge, and then with the word anarchy in the title.
Yeah, of course. It's just to sort of cement the image in people's minds. I think. Yeah,
and I saw one. I don't know if you know this woman, Julie Borowski. She's a libertarian, and she makes. She's got a great YouTube channel following, and she made this one post on Facebook. She said, "If you know, to all of her fans, she's like, if all laws were suspended for let's say 12 hours, what would you do?" And so the top comments, it's like the most likes, right? Going from the number one, the most likes is drink raw milk.
Collect rainwater,
right, that was one. And then make an addition on my house. And then open a lemonade stand.
Stuff, need a license.
Stuff like that, you know. It's like, what do you really think people want to do? You know, do you really think everyone's a secret murderer or a rapist that wants to, you know, for the first chance they get, they want to take advantage of you? Like, is that what you,
it's
think?
Absolutely, you know? It is absolutely absurd. You get this idea that without the thin blue line of the state, that everyone becomes a ravenous psychopath. Whereas there are other things that stop people randomly murdering each other, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's a there's more to humanity than the state. This kind of reminds me of one of the other fallacies that you hear. Do you know the one where people say, "Well, we need a state because people are animals. People can't control their base urges and their violent natures." Well, hang on, these people are different species or something. They're people as well. So you're going to elevate this subset of people who are even more psychopathic to a position where they can exercise this enormous power over everyone else.
Have you read the book The Law by Frederick Bastiat?
No, I really want to read that book, actually. Yeah. But it's highly recommended by many people.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, short little book, fascinating, excellent, you know, quick read. And, yeah, he's got a great passage in there exactly about what you just said, which is basically people tend to think that, you know, like you said, you know, without the politicians, we would just be, you know, animals eating and murdering each other. And so you say, do you think the politicians are made from a different clay than everyone else?
A lot of this stuff is just common sense. You see, I've got quite a lot of faith in intelligence in people in general. I think if it's just that they don't take the time to think about these things. A lot of things about self-ownership and non-aggression principle and anarcho-capitalism, a lot of it is just common sense. If you sit down and think about these things, you come to it organically, really.
Yeah. I mean, to us, I guess it seems much more self-evident than to most other people. We have to, like, really flesh it out and explain it.
Sure.
But it's amazing the kind of conclusion that people have, and I really do think that at the essence of the way most people think is fear. Like, to me, that's what statism is rooted in fear. Fear of your neighbor, fear of the rich, fear of the poor, fear of illegals, right? Fear of, you know, black people, fear of white people, fear of men, fear of Islam, fear of, you know, whatever, name your religion. And so to me, statism is fear, fundamentally, you know, and so one of my friends, Jim Limber Davis, also, he's an author, and he wrote his book called Liberty Defined, and one of his quotes that I always remembered is that when we, when we fear, you know, that our neighbor will become a monster, and then in so doing we empower the state, we become monsters ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it reminds me of that. I think it's Nietzsche, isn't it? A very similar kind of quote. He says, beware when you hunt for monsters, lest you become one yourself. It's a very similar quote, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
So let me ask you, how do you, what are the steps you go through when you want to introduce someone to these ideas? What are the steps that you, how do you explain it to a layman, to somebody who's just new to it?
It's funny you should ask that, because someone asked me the other day, they were aware that I'm an anarchist, because I'm very forward with it. Uh-huh. And I said, well, if you could explain anarchism in one sentence, what would it be? And I said, oh, two words, no guns. So get the gun out of my face. If you, if you remove force, anarchism is essentially the removal of force. So if the situation is voluntary, if there's no initiation of the use of force, then that's brilliant. You're looking at anarchism. It's not the negation of rules. It's just the negation of rulers. So point the gun somewhere else. Point it at people that are attacking you. But I just use the words no guns, and then I go from there. Really, a lot of it's very surprising. A lot of people have the foundations already in their thought. A lot of people, even in our state societies today, avoid paying tax. Maybe for more nefarious reasons, but a lot of people hate paying tax. Everyone I ask say, oh, well, what do you think about taxes? And I had a question on Facebook saying the other week, how much money would we actually save on tax? And I just had to say, look, I'm not an economist, I'm not a mathematician, but I'm going to guess your income would increase dramatically, at least tenfold, if you weren't paying all these different taxes.
Right.
So the point being, a lot of people have the foundations of it there. They're just, it's more like a lens. People like us are lenses. We focus the light rather than actually create the light, emit the light itself, to use an analogy.
And what's fascinating? And there's a good explanation. And what's fascinating is that, in the time of the Revolutionary War here in the United States, They rebelled against the British, unlike the very negligible taxes. What is it, like a stamp tax and like tea tax and like that's it. They like had, I don't know, a couple of percent of their income stolen through taxes, and that was enough to cause a rebellion. And today, how much is, you know, one third, or perhaps including, you know, one third of your income, maybe including all the other taxes, nearly half of your wealth is taxed away, and yet people on Independence Day are celebrating their freedom.
Forget today. You think about it, and you're talking about the United States. Just as recently after the Revolution as the whiskey rebellion, or the these early rebellions. Yeah. Some of the taxes were higher than under the British. It's absolutely crazy. This is like 10 years after the Revolution.
Yeah,
so true. It's okay to rebel against the and justly rebel against the authority of a foreign ruler. But when the authority is domestic, suddenly it becomes totally legitimate. That's fascinating to me. And I do refer to this in the book as well, the Whiskey Rebellion and the Boston incident as well. It's fascinating to me how I don't see how it works. So you get a group of men, presumably, who magically have the arbitrary authority. I'm talking about the founding fathers.
Yeah.
To make up these rules. I mean, who gives them the authority to tell other Americans or other colonists at the time how to govern themselves? It's absolutely bizarre.
Right.
This is not just the Americans. It's the same in every society. Obviously, you get the social contract theory and all that kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
But I always just turn around in those situations and say, well, I never signed any contract, so I don't see how these people have the right to govern how I live or dictate laws and things like that.
Yeah, and it's amazing that in no other aspect of society, of our lives, do we accept this idea that everybody is beholden to this thing that none of us signed. You know, your cell phone bill, you have a contract, right? Maybe your water company, you have a contract. Maybe with, you know, I don't know, with your catering company, you have a contract. You have a contract with everybody that you do business with, except with the state. That's implied because a couple of old white rich guys, you know, like two centuries ago, sat down and wrote something down, and somehow that applies to me.
every society is guilty of it. If you think of my country, a French dude in 1066 rampaged over the Channel. I'm the king now.
Right.
Killed the previous king.
Right.
Oh, okay. Then, well, you magically have the authority to create laws. But that's where it all stems from, isn't it?
Right.
It's the Norman Conquest. Most states are just founded in violence, aren't they? You can dress it up. You can put lipstick on a pig, but it doesn't mean it's going to be any more beautiful.
Exactly. But it would be more like a rampaging, you know, crazy rabid pig.
Yeah, sure. Especially now you've held it down and applied lipstick to it. I expect it to be quite mad, yeah.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah, quite right about that. But yeah, people. Yeah, it's a challenge. You know, it's a challenge to spread these ideas. It's not easy. You know, we're functioning on on the outskirts of what's politically acceptable. You know, code of behavior and politically acceptable speech. You know, we're functioning completely outside of that. And so, like, when I talk to people, I don't mention the word anarchist at all. I kind of take a backdoor method. You know, I just say I'm a voluntarist, and that like says, oh, what's that? Or when somebody asks me what's my podcast, I tell, you know, they find out if I have a podcast or YouTube channel. I don't tell them the name yet because it's called Peaceful Anarchism. So I say, all right, this is what I talk about, right? I talk about homeschooling, unschooling, precious metals, central banking, non-aggression, philosophy, economics, history, morality, that kind of thing, you know, property rights, non-aggression, self-ownership. Oh, and by the way, you know, and I say, you know, what's voluntary in your life? What would you say is a voluntary relationship, right? And so they say, well, my friends, my you know, the businesses that I patronize, that kind of thing. You know, those are voluntary arrangements, right? My spouse, it's my voluntary arrangement.
Employee, employer partnership.
Employee,
totally voluntary.
Right, right. And then I say, okay, now what's an involuntary? What's an example of an involuntary relationship? And because I interact with a lot of homeschooling mothers, and so one of the first things they say is, the public school system is involuntary. And I'm like, yes, you're right, exactly. Now, expand that outwards. The public school system is just one part of the state. So it's the idea of the state that is the symbol of the violation of consent, of the involuntary relationship in our lives, right? And so once they understand that, then they say, for that reason, if we are to stay logically consistent in advocating for voluntary interactions, we must exempt the state. State must not be part of that. Therefore, you must be an anarchist if you advocate for voluntary interactions. And so
everyone's I always say if I get into a deep discussion with someone who's open minded and a critical thinker, I always say that everyone is an anarchist. If you read Stefan Molyneux's books, Everyday Anarchy, I think Everyday Anarchy is the name of one of them. He actually makes this point that we all live personal lives of anarchy. As you say, we choose our spouses, we choose our friends. The employer-employee relationship is voluntary. No one puts a gun to my head to clock in, despite what some socialist types say, or we're forced to work and things like that. No one forces me to work. Choose to. So 99% of our lives is anarchistic.
Yeah.
And as Molyneux would say, we wouldn't have it any other way.
Right.
Even the most Stalinist, communist sort of kind of person would not have it any other way, which is kind of crazy when you consider you got this tiny sliver, this 1%, the state, where we insist that actually we don't want anarchy in that respect, a very important respect, which is giving them the power to basically stick a finger in every orifice, to pardon the phrase.
Yes, that is a good point, that most people in most of their lives, they do live anarchistically. And
practice.
You know, they make their own choices, you know, regarding, yeah, like you said, employment, when to go to bed, what to eat, you know, what spouse to, you know, partner with, things like that. And
sure.
And if we were told what to do in those aspects of our lives, we would, you know, see that as a violation.
Look at it this way, right? Sorry to interrupt, but
no,
look at it this way. Imagine if we had a fair redistribution of wives. So
yeah.
I happen to be single,
right.
So say if Adam's single, so a load of other men, that's not fair. We need a fairer redistribution of wives. I mean, would it work then? Everyone would be up and uproar. You can't force people to marry Adam. it's perfectly okay to apply that flawed logic to things like money.
Yeah,
so
right, exactly.
You punish success, you raise taxes on the successful, that's a fair redistribution of wealth, as the phrase goes.
Yeah.
But if you apply that logic to anything else, just for people that you know that haven't been exposed to this kind of thinking, it's absolutely absurd. Like you say, would you redistribute women to men? Or would you it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a wonderful analogy. Because, yeah, it points to the absurdity of the whole idea, in that taxes is essentially a punishment. You know, it's like if you know we you know people who are liberal or Democrat, you know, part of the Occupy movement, they want to tax the rich, right? Because they're greedy and they got that money because they stole it from us, you know, and they want to tax it and give it to us. And so basically, yeah, like you said, it's a punishment for success, for being wealthy, right? Because you know, most people have this idea that the wealthy are somehow evil, and I guess it's mostly a Democrat thing.
Stole their wealth.
right. So, whereas you know, we always have to make this distinction that, yeah, I mean, there are wealthy people that have gotten their wealth illegitimately and through, let's say, crime and violence and things like that. But for the most part, most people that are wealthy earn their wealth through providing a service or a good that people voluntarily purchased and enjoyed and actually enriched their lives. Like, I'm happy that Bill Gates is a rich guy. I'm happy that Steve Jobs, when he was alive, was a rich guy. I'm happy because he made my life better with all the technology that he made. You know, I have a MacBook. I have an iPhone. I'm happy. You know, he's made my life better. And so, you know, wealth is you know, it's a positive feedback. It's like you create something well, you benefit people's lives, and they pay you. That's the beautiful thing about free markets and capitalism, you know? It's a win-win. And that's one thing that I always heard Stefan Molyneux say, and it really stuck with me. You know, it's like you go buy sandwich, you know, you have $5 and they have a sandwich, you know, they want your $5 more than the sandwich, and you want the sandwich more than your $5. Even trade, you're both happy. And you shake hands, and guess what? You both say thank you. That's the other amazing thing about capitalism. Both people say thank you at the same time. They're both happy.
it's an amazing thing. They say, don't they, it's the single biggest contributor to the reduction in poverty in history, the advent of capitalism. You look at an economy like China. Look, you're an economist, so you tell me. You look at a place like China where the middle class has just exploded. So it just reduces poverty like no one's business, really. Unfortunately, it's like I say, we live in a very strange world because we have these, like I was saying at the beginning, you have the something that's threatening to the state has to be tarred and has to be blackened. So the word anarchy. Even you don't like to describe yourself as an anarchist, as you said before, because of the connotations of it.
I mean, after I give it that you know, that preparation, then I say I allow them to come to the conclusion. As a result of all that, I am an anarchist.
Oh, cool.
Then they understand it, and so I basically eliminate that initial shock factor because I find sometimes that shock factor erects emotional barriers that I just find it just makes it unnecessarily difficult to break through them intellectually, you know. So,
I suppose I have. If we're using analogies in the, you remember the film The Matrix? I've got more of a rougher. I just want to rip the jack out of the back of their head rather than just ease it out. But I suppose it's partly due to frustration. I'd like to see some kind of green shoots of anarchism rise up, at least while I'm alive. I'm actually a pessimist in respect to, I don't believe that a free society is necessarily going to come about in our lifetimes, but I'd like to help build the foundations, if you like. Not to be a pessimist, I'm just saying, it's given that the sort of the system that we're in at the moment, I think it's going to be very difficult, even with the internet and the spread of knowledge. But it's like, again, showing his influence now. Look, Stefan Molyneux says it's a noble endeavour to try and spread the knowledge in these early stages. But hopefully it will happen in the future. We will have a free society if peaceful parenting is encouraged, if what I call voluntary affirmative actions are encouraged, so people just circumventing, acting outside of the state, doing things themselves, taking responsibility for their own lives, basically.
Actually,
very bright future.
You heard the term agorism?
Agorism
is basically what you just said, which is encouraging people rather than like directly resisting the state and, you know, maybe, I don't know, protesting, marching, you know, directly resisting. Agorism is basically living your life outside the state, avoiding the state as much as possible, avoiding taxation. Don't send your kids to public school. Don't conduct your business in a way that the state can see your business and can tax it. So basically avoid in every way that you can the state. That is the life of an agorist. And one of the quotes that I like is a libertarian, a libertarian understands the non-aggression principle. The anarchist enjoys the non-aggression principle, and the agorist lives the non-aggression principle. I thought that's a very good illustration of you know, and that's kind of what I tell people. And actually, what you said, which is, you know, you said you're a pessimist. I kind of am the same as you, but I don't see myself as a pessimist because the way I look at it is, it's irrelevant whether a free society happens or not, whether a voluntary society happens or not, because it's kind of the same way as like saying to an abolitionist in the 19th century, you know, a society without slavery is not going to come in your lifetime. So you're just a utopian idealist. So stop even trying, you know?
Yeah.
And to me that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're not going to live to see it. All that matters is that you're living, you know, you're stating your principles, what you believe in, and you live by them, you know, and you live a noble and moral and kind and compassionate life, right? And hope, you know, through the spread of knowledge, through your book, through your YouTube channel, that other people will learn and follow your way. And I think that's the best way. that we can affect change is by embracing and embodying this philosophy, right, in our own life and in the way we raise our children. And so in that way, slowly we are, you can kind of say it's a kind of like eugenics. We're populating the world full of, you know, people who understand property rights and self-ownership.
It's a good eugenics.
It's a good eugenics, right. you know, people through peaceful parenting, we're raising people that's going to be the adults of the future that understand these philosophies and that will promulgate them and will really create a much more peaceful and prosperous society. So to me, it's irrelevant whether or not it happens. It's like another kind of analogy that I enjoy is, I'm planting the seeds now for which we might not enjoy the shade in our lifetime. Right.
That's good, yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's good. I think I've heard that analogy before. You got the big oak won't enjoy the shade of the seeds. And that's a very nice quote. I would say, I think, I'm not sure whether I'm a pessimist in terms of I don't think the actual society will happen, but I get what you're saying about the slavery analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is, my concern is not necessarily that it will happen or that it won't happen. All my concern is that I'm living a compassionate and moral life and a decent life. That's my concern, right? I can't control what other people do, right? We can try to spread these ideas. We can try to influence people, but in the end, we can only control ourselves. And so, for me, that's it. And that's what I tell people. Forget about, you know, some people get overwhelmed. Like, well, it's never going to happen. We're never going to change people. Don't worry about it. Just focus on yourself. Okay? That's enough work for anyone to do. Just focus on yourself.
Yeah, sure.
Improve yourself as a human being. And that will be one less person advocating for the legitimacy of the state. And if that happens, I'm a happy man.
Indeed, this is why we fall, when I talk about anarchism with some people, you inevitably fall back into this practicality crutch. So they always say, oh, well, if you can't explain to me the price of tuna in spring water in 70 years' time in an Asda supermarket, oh, well, you can't explain that, therefore it doesn't work. And you think, well, no, it's the mechanism itself. It's not not the details of the mechanism, is it?
Yeah, actually, I just heard a recent video of Stefan Molyneux just like today, and he had a caller call in, and basically the caller was basically asking him all the common status questions, like, how would regulations happen? You know, how would you regulate this business? How would contracts be enforced without state monopolized courts? You know, how would private police happen? And so he had to explain all this stuff. How would education happen? You know, and he was trying to, but in the end, it doesn't really matter. Like, he didn't have to explain to this person, because it's kind of like asking the abolitionist, you know, if you can't explain to me how a society will work without slavery, then who picked the cotton? What you're saying is invalid, because you can't explain how the future will pan out without slaves, you know. to which he should say, it doesn't matter. All I know is, owning human beings is immoral against their will. That's all that matters. That's
a moral absolute. Yeah.
That's all that's important. From there, we can find a way to
survive. Again, I'm no economist. A lot of this is just common sense. You can think about it. People act, you know, I explain this in my book. You don't have to know the ins and outs of a duck's ass. People act according to incentives.
Right.
If people want to feel secure in their society, if they want potable water, for example, if they want all of these goodies, then of course the free market is going to provide those goodies. People act according to incentives.
Right.
Without, just because a state isn't there, that doesn't mean people are going to magically not need roads or access to work or a freight system to deliver their goods. That's absolutely ridiculous. But this is the thing: people are so caught up in this kind of mentality. Well, it's the fallacy of if the state provides X, without the state X won't be provided.
Right.
It's a very basic fallacy, and it's just getting people past the tuna example, like, you can't tell me the price of tuna, etc., or you can't tell me how cotton would be picked after the slaves are emancipated, therefore it doesn't work. Well, that's ridiculous. It's the mechanism itself. It's the fact that people act according to incentives. Free market would be perfectly fine. It'd be perfectly fine. You'd still have regulations. Of course you would. businesses would self-regulate. It's just common sense, isn't it? Would you want to eat in a restaurant where the staff were licking the burgers before they're putting them in the buns? The restaurant go out of business very soon as soon as people started spreading the word around. Don't go to Joe's.
Right, exactly.
It's self-regulation. You don't need a monolithic, great big state regulating things.
And there's a great quote by Frederick Bastiat on this very topic, which is, he said, like, in 1850, which is like, you know, people, the socialists tend to think that without the state, you know, we can't have roads, you know, we can't have maybe, I don't know, mail delivery. But he's like, if that's true, then does that mean that if the state doesn't raise grain, then we're all going to starve? Is that, you know? So
it's just crazy. No, I think talking about, I just think it's one of these common sense things. It all boils down to common sense. People know, I think, instinctively that they're self-owning. By demonstration, they know they're self-owning. I mean, for God's sake, we wouldn't have legal systems in every single society known to man if we didn't implicitly agree that everyone is self-owning. Because otherwise, why would we prosecute people for crimes? Because if no one's self-owning, they're not responsible for their actions, therefore, why would you? If they're just automatons that act according to no will, or not according to their own will, then why are we prosecuting people for these crimes? So even the most communistic society that Kim Jong-un believes this, all of these, every society known to man, implicitly, whether they like it or not, agrees with self-ownership. And self-ownership, or sovereignty as I call it, is the basis for being an anarchist. So in a way, we're all anarchists because we all implicitly believe by demonstration that we're sovereign, we're self-owning.
Right.
And if that's the case, as I explain in my book, the burden of proof as to why the state can violate that sovereignty, violate that self-ownership, is with the statists. They have to explain it. This is another thing I find quite remarkable, is people always turn it around and say, well, you have to justify why we can't have a state. And go, hang on a minute. You have to justify to the anarchist why we need rulers, because people are, by demonstration, but empirically speaking, you can see in the world that we're all self-owning individuals. Right. So the burden of proof is with the person making the claim. If you want to control my body, if you want to conscript me into your armies to kill other people, you've got to explain to me what gives you justification to claim my body and my mind. It's a very crazy world we live in, isn't it, Danilo?
Yeah. It's like you know, people have this idea, they can't imagine, you know, how we would have roads, how we would have the post office, how we would have, you know, I don't know, whatever, bridges. Without this entity that basically steals money from these people and then gives it to these people, without that entity, we wouldn't have all these things. Like with everything else, like just take the electronics industry, right? Almost pretty much unregulated, right? And how quickly has that progressed? And not only has the innovation and the technology improved, but the price has plummeted, right? Like, how many people that are considered poor, below the poverty line in America, have smartphones, have TVs, you know, have all kinds of electronics that, you know, weren't even in existence decades ago, and as a result of having those, they have access to the amount of information that would rival any library in history.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically as a result of an unregulated market, and yet we think if the government doesn't control the mailing of pieces of paper, then everything's just going to crumble.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And you think it's just a small, what I find very frustrating, it's a small leap of logic to say that if the dial is good, dialing it up that way, dial it up that way, get rid of the entire state, have a total free market.
Yeah.
Imagine how much more prosperous you could be then. I mean, imagine if you weren't paying. Imagine all the money that people pay in taxes, sales tax or VAT as we call it here, income tax, all of these different fingers in all of the different orifices. imagine if they were removed. Imagine the purchasing power that would increase in the economy. It'd be an explosion. It'd be a supernova of economic activity if you weren't paying the mafia its cut, so to speak.
I interviewed a guy recently, you know, talk about that you're from England. I interviewed a guy called Kevin Dixie from the No Other Choice Know the Choice website, and it's his business. He's basically a gun rights activist. He's a gun instructor, and he talks about gun rights. And what's fascinating is England basically has complete gun ban, right?
Yeah.
And and I've heard recently that now they're trying to ban knives. Right? Have you heard this?
There is there have been various amnesties over the years. Basically, they put a big bucket, say, chuck your knife in there. I think there is a custodial sentence if you're caught carrying a knife by the police. You can go to prison. I think that's coming a couple of years ago.
Really?
Pretty sure that's the case. Yeah, I mean, incidentally, I actually am an archer, so I shoot a bow and arrow, like just for target practice. Not to hunt, because obviously that's illegal in this country as well. But basically, everything's illegal.
Hunting
in this
is illegal
country.
In England.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can't hunt with a bow and arrow. You can't hunt with a bow and arrow in this country, or a crossbow, or anything like that. But anyway, I'm sure they'll probably ban that soon. Probably ban staring at people in a nasty way, because it might have lethal effects, especially on leftists.
Wait. So how are you supposed to hunt with, like, a pea shooter or like a BB gun? How are you supposed to hunt?
I think BB guns are still around. You can, in this country, I believe that you can use a shotgun if you have a shotgun certificate, but the vetting process obviously is, again, to use the phrase, ins and outs of a duck's arse. So the police have to go down your go into your house. Your ammo has to be separated from the gun. All of these different regulations to make it as hard as possible.
Wow.
And it's usually people in the country that own shotguns. And I think there's a license for a rifle as well, but as you said before, it's extremely regulated, so it's pretty much impossible for a normal citizen to own a firearm.
Yeah, and yet...
Don't give it up. Americans, keep your guns, please.
Right, and yet, even though guns are so regulated and pretty much banned, the murder rate is, like, skyrocketing, I think. Is it from what, knives? Is like, as a result... Say again?
It's rife in London. Knife crime is going up in London, I believe. It's becoming endemic, yeah.
And so they're banning knives. So what's going to be next? Banning hammers? Banning what's... screwdrivers? So basically, if people want to kill other people, they're going to find a way. Or if they want to kill themselves, they're going to find a way, right?
Yeah.
And it's
someone could burst in right now and throttle me with these glasses, you know. It's the evil intent behind the instrument, not the... It's like if I put a gun on the table with no other human to interact with it, it's not going to randomly start shooting people Jedi style, is it? But again, this is the fallacy of it all, is people just can't think. I think people just can't think critically, and it's quite a dangerous thing, really, isn't it? Because they're easily manipulated. And they suffer these flaws in their logic. I think if we had more critical thinkers, then I think we'd definitely have more anarchists. We'd definitely have more people who believe in voluntarism, I think. But it's a scary thing when you look around, you see people believe this kind of nonsense. But yeah, you're right. It's the will behind the instrument. It's not the instrument itself. So you can ban everything under the sun. You're still going to have crazy people out there who have mental breakdowns and want to hurt people.
Right.
It's a sad fact of life, isn't it?
But the truly sophisticated crazy person goes into politics, right? That's the truly sophisticated.
That is the loony bin. That's where they gather them all. The politicians.
It's like it's the magnet for the scum of society. You know, the
scum
magnet
rises to the top.
Right, like Lord of the Rings. You know, you were saying how you're gonna do some videos on Lord of the Rings. You know, the state is you know, the analogy is the ring is the state, right? The ring of power is the state, right? And everybody is drawn to it, and everybody is corrupted by it. And there's no way that you can use the state or the ring in a way that's beneficial, that can help people, right? Even the most wise, the Gandalf, right? He didn't want to use the ring, so
refused it. Yeah,
right. So going go ahead.
Sorry, pardon. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No. Go ahead.
I was just going to go, I'm looking into this at the moment, Tolkien, it's highly fascinating. Like you say, even Gandalf refused the ring.
Yeah.
You can't use it. Tolkien had a very interesting conception of evil. He didn't believe people were evil in and of themselves. What makes a person evil is, ironically enough, their good intentions. So even with the best intentions in the world, they say, oh, I want to... That's what Boromir, you know, the character of Boromir.
Right, right.
That's... Originally, he wanted the ring to defend his people. So right, he wanted to defend Gondor. He said, I want to use this ring to defend my people.
Right.
But the problem is, that's why politicians don't work. That's why the state doesn't work, because you get corrupted by the power. You get, it goes to your head.
Yeah.
And that's with any person. That's why I think there's such a close analogy between the One Ring and statism, because mm-hmm. everyone desires it, everyone wants to use it, but no one can wield it, as you say, because it has this corrupting influence. And nothing good comes from force, and the ring symbolizes power. So virtue doesn't spring from the barrel of a gun, basically. You can't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Another way I kind of describe the state to people is like, you know, if you have something wrong with your iPhone, and somebody brings a gun and tries to fix your iPhone, or you're going to play chess with somebody, and they want to win, so they bring a knife, right?
Yeah, it's that saying, isn't it? You know what beats a royal flush? A gun. Well, no, you just pull the gun out. Yeah, you win.
Right.
So yeah, sure.
The application of violence is never really a way to solve any complex, sophisticated intellectual problem at all. It's the choice of the lowly, the vile, the wicked. You know, those are the people that choose to use violence to solve problems. Actually, that's another line of questioning that you can I sometimes use with people, and I see other anarchists use, is when you just meet somebody, is you ask them, do you use violence to solve problems in your daily life? And they say, no. You know, would you advocate other people use violence to solve your problems? No. How about a big group of you? Would you all you advocate?
Yeah.
How about if you vote for a politician, use violence on your behalf? Is that good?
Magically it becomes okay. Yeah.
Right. At which point is the violence justified, or does it change to becoming a moral action? And the answer is never. So you see,
it goes deeper than just even sovereignty. So in the first part of the book, I talk about consistency, a very basic thing. So do we prefer to be consistent in our thinking, or do we prefer, ironically enough, an anarchy of inconsistency? Mm. So do we accept, like, as you say, violence in our everyday lives? And the answer for most people is we don't.
Mm.
So how is it right that the state can initiate violence? That's an inconsistency in our thinking.
Yeah.
Most people want to be consistent, so that's a small section of the book that needs to be clarified for people, because some of these things, they're so under the radar, some of these ideas. Mm. Paradoxically speaking, some of these ideas are so under the radar and so basic that you can not see, you can't see your nose to spite your face kind of thing. So consistency is extremely important.
Yeah.
And if we want to be consistent in our thinking, and I think most rational people do, then we can't have a state, because a state is the ultimate initiation of the use of force.
Yeah.
We don't accept force in any other aspect of our life, therefore we shouldn't accept it in our governance. it's very simple, really, when you couch it in those terms.
Yeah. Another way I like to think about it, or that has been told me, which I really enjoy, is we interact with ourselves. We are the ruler or the monarch of ourselves. So it's a monarchy of self, and it's an anarchist, in relation to others. Anarchy in relation to others, which I really enjoy that explanation. So yeah. So what wonderful talking to you. So before we go, please reiterate your your contact information, how people want to if they want to follow you, how they get in touch with you, or if they want to get your book, how do they get that?
Oh yeah, sure. So the book, The Declaration of the Self on the Abolition of the State, available on Amazon, Amazon US, Amazon UK. The website is www.clarkad.co.uk, and the YouTube channel, I try to upload a video every day, probably every other day. That's just ADClark on YouTube. Type that in, you should find me. Yeah, quite easy.
Excellent. And before we go, I always ask this of my guests, what is your favorite quote of all time?
I think I've got a good one, and it relates to statism in our system. It's quite well known, and it's usually attributed to Albert Einstein, and it is, insanity is repeating the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, and that ties in with our electoral system. every now and again we get a new idiot surprises, like a polished turd, and we think that things are going to be different, and they never are. So there you go.
A useful idiot, or a tool, or a puppet, or whatever you want to call them, a clown. take your pick.
All the essential ingredients still remain. They're still initiating the use of force. They're still using taxation and all of the nasty increments of the state. So in that sense, they're all the same, whether they're Republican or Democrat or Labour or Tory. So.
Right. And, yeah. One way you can translate when you see a campaign, you know, politicians campaigning for office, just think whatever they're saying, whatever they say they want to do in office, just imagine them saying, "I want to use the stolen funds to do X," yeah. And then the other guy's like, "No! I want to use the stolen funds to do X."
I'm going to steal even more and give you even more.
All right. So, where do you want the stolen funds to go? And all the anarchists are saying, maybe we shouldn't be stealing from each other. How about that? Yeah. Can we try that? Maybe. Okay. So not a radical idea at all. So
probably be like, you don't like poor people,
right? What do you hate the poor? Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. Start from square one. So all right, cool. Wonderful, wonderful conversation, Adam. Really enjoyed it. So yeah, please everyone check out his website. Check out his book. Order his book. It's a wonderful read. He's a great writer. I think he illustrates the points and he explains them in great detail and very clearly, very concisely. A lot of references to movies, right? Especially Lord of the Rings and different quotes and awesome stuff. My kind of book. So I highly recommend it to people. Yeah, check it out. The Declaration of the Self on the Abolition of the State. Yeah, awesome title. So wonderful talking to you, Adam.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So everybody, this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network on the Seeds of Liberty podcast, which is solpodcast.org, and the Conscious Resistance Network. Wishing all of you have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this content and would like to see more of it, please feel free to donate and help me interview other fascinating people. You can do so through Patreon. That's patreon.com/peacefulanarchism to help me out. $1 a show is all I ask. If you feel so inclined to donate more, please feel free. It will only assist me in spreading the message of freedom and voluntarism that much farther and that much more efficiently. You can also donate to my Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is in the description to my videos as well as on my website, peacefulanarchism.com. And while you're on my site, there's a donate button to donate through PayPal. If you prefer to donate through PayPal, you can do so with that. But Patreon is a little bit easier for content creators, as you can set up a recurring donation if you so desire. Also, while you're on my website, peacefulanarchism.com, please feel free to sign up, enter your email address, sign up for my newsletter, and you'll receive updates every time I post something, a video or an interview. I do not send out any spam. Or you can also follow me on Facebook, under facebook.com/peacefulanarchism or facebook.com/DaniloCuellar3, I believe. DaniloCuellar3. So either one of those methods, if you are able to donate, I would be most appreciative. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a magnificent day.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411, because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.